Okay, I did just want to take a quick moment and make a plea. And look, I'm the village idiot as it relates to algorithms and social media and how all these apps work, but I do know this. The more five-star ratings and subscriptions we get, the more we're able to get this information out to those who might not otherwise come across it. So if you love the podcast, if God's using it in some way in your walk with Jesus, please, please, please take 5 seconds, follow it, give it 5 stars, and let's help create a movement of disciple makers.
You know, a good reminder from Genesis chapter 1, verse 3 is God always pierces the darkness, always. And the darkness doesn't last.
And the high priest, the great high priest, who is Jesus Christ, he puts his hands on your life, and you take your hands off, and you say, my life is surrendered for your purposes.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Downline Podcast. My name is Jamie Trussell. I have the privilege of hosting this for Downline and serving as the lead pastor of Redeemer Dripping Springs in the Texas Hill Country. We hope this podcast helps you faithfully walk with Jesus while pouring your life into others. And today we are joined by one of our recent Downline Summit speakers, Courtney Doctor. Courtney, how are you?
I'm good, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So I think a lot of people will be familiar with you because we had, I thought, a really encouraging summit where a lot of people came. But for those that might not be, or, you know, if they haven't read your stuff on Gospel Coalition or the Bible studies or works you've done or heard you speak, give people a little bit of flyover of who is Courtney Doctor and what you're up to.
Yeah. Well, I do. You kind of alluded to the fact I work for the Gospel Coalition. So I'm the director of women's initiatives there. And I've had the privilege of writing a couple Bible studies and one book, another one on the way, which I'm excited about. And I have a kid's book coming out in September that I wrote with my oldest grandson. So that was a ton of fun. One of my all-time favorite projects for all of life, probably. But yeah, I have 5 grandkids, 4 grown adult kids, 3 of them married. My husband and I have recently, like in the last few years, moved to North Georgia, just south of Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Oh, so we're like, wait, where are you in North Georgia?
We are north of Dalton, south of Chattanooga, kind of in the middle of, I mean, we have a couple acres. We've got 2 horses, you know, and right now life is so crazy and fun. Our 2 of our adult children and their spouses and their kids and their dogs have all moved in with us for a couple months. So life is full. So I just shot a text out to the entire group and I was like, hey, I'm hopping on a podcast. So that just means dogs, kids, you know, the whole thing needs to be a little bit quieter for a few minutes.
Where were y'all before going to Georgia?
St. Louis. We had moved to St. Louis in 2010 to go to seminary. So my husband and I went to seminary together in our 40s. We kind of did this, like, we were living in Kansas. We literally sold the farm because we had about 15 acres and moved to St. Louis and went to seminary together when we had 2 boys in college and 2 girls in middle and high school. So it was crazy. But then we stayed in St. Louis. We loved St. Louis.
You loved St. Louis.
Loved St. Louis.
So what got you from St. Louis to North Georgia? I mean, those are kind of old stomping grounds. I grew up in Auburn, but we'd go to Chattanooga every summer. I-75 from that, you know, Atlanta to Chattanooga. Yeah.
We are right off of that. I'll tell you when we're not recording what exit it is.
Yes. Good.
But yeah, we literally, we just realized like we can work from anywhere. I work remotely and my husband for the most part does too. And so we did an Airbnb in Chattanooga for 3 months. And then we did an Airbnb in the town where our oldest son lives for 3 months. And we were like, Lord, where do you want us? I did not see this coming. I did not see the South being part of our story, but we love being here.
But then you kind of realize there actually is a promised land and it's the Southeast. And so why not settle? That's what happened.
I don't know, Jamie. I'm not there yet. I am a Midwestern girl through and through. So I'm kind of like that Midwestern. I love it. Love it.
I don't understand that. It's like all y'all love flat and cold.
I know, but also really nice people, you know?
Well, like, it is nice people.
See, like, there are no sunsets like a Kansas sunset because you see the horizon for, you know, for just ages. And so, yeah I love it. I realized that because we live in the middle of like these North Georgia pine trees now, and that like my soul breathing happy space is the plains, like the open where I can see forever. Not so that I don't absolutely.
Does that feel a little claustrophobic, all the trees?
You know, I love, I mean, they're beautiful. I'm not, because Kansas doesn't have a ton of trees. So I love it. But it was the first time I kind of drove out of here and hit the plains. And I was like, oh, my soul is breathing
That's
a little bit. So
isn't it?
But I do find the trees beautiful. I sit out and just watch them, you know, sway in the wind.
Southern trees. Yeah. Okay. Hey, real quick, you mentioned Gospel Coalition Women's Initiatives. Y'all have the conference coming up again this summer?
We do our every other year conference. Man, I love it. Yeah, if anybody is listening and wants to come join us, I bet we could even get a discount code going for y'all because it's a fun conference.
Yeah, you want to give a 30-second plug on what y'all are talking about this year?
Yeah, the whole theme is turn your eyes. And so we're looking at the Psalms, 7 different types of Psalms, and how they help us turn our eyes to Jesus in really all of life, all of our emotions, all of our circumstances. And then we'll have, I don't know, 50 breakout sessions and Shane and Shane leading worship and 60 speakers. And yeah, we're really excited about it. Mm-hmm. It's thousands of women from around the world gathered to worship God. So yeah, if you want to come, June 11th through 13th in Indianapolis.
All right, June 11th through 13th. You mentioned Psalms. I'm going to segue that to another arena of Old Testament wisdom literature. You've done some work on Proverbs, which I find to be, especially in disciple making, really helpful at times, but also if misused, maybe not so helpful sometimes. So let's start big picture. When people are reading Proverbs, what is the helpful way to read it? And what are some maybe pitfalls to not fall into when just approaching the book at large?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I think most of us either just intuitively approach it as like, oh, these are promises from God, because that's how we read so much of Scripture. But when we get to the wisdom literature, we really do need to remember that, especially Proverbs, these are predominantly Solomon's reflections on the way the world normally works. These are kind of general, they're based in observation. They are looking at how we best function and flourish in the world that God made. And so wisdom literature is really asking the question, how do I live God's way in God's world? Mm-hmm. Or how do I increase in this? I had an Old Testament professor in seminary that would say Proverbs is looking at the art of godly living. And so It's more observation. So the easiest explanation or the easiest example of that is going to be train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And people cling to that like a promise. And then the adult children walk away from the Lord for at least a part of their lives. And they're like, but God promised, you know, did I not? So then the burden falls on them. You know, did I not train up my child in the way he should go? When instead, this is a general observation. It's still good and right. Train up your children in the way they should go. And generally speaking, they will not walk away from it. And so I guess I just want to say, as I'm even saying that, to any parent whose child has walked away, just the reminder that the story is not over yet. Don't think that whatever's happening today is the end of the story. It's not.
No. That's really good. Well, and that is, honestly, that's one that came to mind when you were using that as an example of, it makes sense to want to cling to that as a promise, right? Mm-hmm. Because formulas, I was speaking the other day to a group and just kind of saying, but the kingdom just doesn't, 2 + 2 rarely equals 4 in life and God's economy. It would be great if it did, because then we could go, this is the input, here's the output, it's predictable. But Proverbs kind of tells us, actually, life's pretty unpredictable, but here's some better or worse ways to go about it.
Yep. Yeah. And if it was formulaic, if it was what you were saying, 2 + 2 = 4, then I would just be on my merry way. I mean, that's great. I don't need God in that. Just give me the formula.
That's right.
And
that's
I can.
Right.
But instead, it's like, oh, none of this is formulaic. And I need him every step of the way, you know, that every moment I need thee. And that's part of the reason it's not formulaic, because all of us would be prone to just like, thanks, God. I got it. I got the formula.
Right.
And I'm, you know, see on the other side. We wouldn't depend on him every day.
What is the role of wisdom in Proverbs, in the sense that it kind of seems like this personified living, acting, breathing, like help readers kind of navigate, especially in the first part of the book. It seems like wisdom is almost alive, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it is personified as a woman. So the way Proverbs is structured, you have the first nine chapters, which is setting up the whole, really trying to create a desire for wisdom in you. So it's a father speaking to a son, and he's talking about two women, and he's talking about the Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly, and that there is a path that each of these women are laying out. And he's encouraging his son to not go down the path of folly, not listen to Lady Folly, because that leads to death. And so, but to listen to Lady Wisdom, because that leads to life. And then you have chapters 10 through 30, which are just the collected sayings of wisdom. And they're all over the place, right?
Kind
of like, you know, they're just pithy and they bounce subjects and it's hard to find any structure. And then you get to the end of Proverbs and you have the concluding chapter, chapter 31, which is, again, a woman, right? It's a bride. Mm-hmm. And this is a mother speaking to a son now. So you have the father mm-hmm. speaking to the son, and then you have the mother speaking to the son. And okay. both are speaking about the type of woman they should either listen to or the type of woman that they should seek and pursue as a bride. And so to understand the structure of it and to understand what Solomon was doing, and Solomon didn't even understand, because it's not until we get to the end of the story that we understand that, you know, not only is Christ the embodiment of all wisdom, that all knowledge and wisdom is found in him, but then when we get to Revelation, we again see the two women. We see the bride of Christ, and we see, and we see the, you know, we'll just call her the woman of Babylon for a
That's
minute,
right.
Because
yeah.
I don't know who's listening.
Yeah. The yeah. new Jezebel. Or, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So they pop up again at the end of the story. And really what both the father and the mother in Proverbs are doing, they are begging the son to walk toward Lady Wisdom and to walk on the path that leads to life. Did that answer your question, or did I rabbit trail?
No, that's fantastic, especially on the structure piece. So if, I guess for some people, I mean, even pastorally, you go, I think some people want to walk the path of wisdom thinking it leads to God versus it flowing from God already reconciling you to him. So, I mean, there's a way of reading Proverbs that kind of feels like, oh, if I start doing all this stuff, I can get right with God type of deal.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Well, it talks a lot about like the righteous and the wicked, just like Psalms does.
That's right.
And I think we read that from our, you know, from our understanding on this side of the cross, that, you know, that righteousness has been given to us. And so I think when we read righteous and wicked in the wisdom literature, we have to understand that the author is usually speaking about those that are walking with God and those that are not walking with God. Mm. And so to understand that in light of, God's people and those that are being faithful to God within his people and those that are not and that are living, you know, in opposition to his ways. But I think what you said about this idea that we want to obey to get to God instead of understanding that he is the fountainhead. He is the source. He is the one in whom this path of life is laid out. So it's in him and through him and for him that we walk this path, not because he's at the end of it, but because he's the very beginning of it, which is what the theme verse for all of Proverbs is, Proverbs 9:10. And it says, you know, that the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord, or I probably said that backwards. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And so he is, you can't get to wisdom without God. Yeah.
So, okay. So let me ask you this, because right, we mentioned God's designed the world and for humans to flourish in a certain way. And even for non-believers, right, there are ways in which in God's general grace and his loving kindness, non-believers can flourish in better or worse ways. It may not be salvific, right?
Right. Right.
Does Proverbs work for them, or is this only, hey, if you're not a Christian, don't worry about trying to follow this stuff?
That's such a great question. No, I think it absolutely is, because this is God's world and because he created it a certain way and he created us a certain way, that this way of wisdom is flourishing, right? It's good to be kind to your neighbor. It's good to not be a nagging wife. It's good to be a child that listens. I mean, these are good for you. And so salvation belongs to the Lord alone. But the path of wisdom is good for anybody to put their feet on. It is just like you said, the way of flourishing. And then we pray that through that, they would come to know, they would come to know the Lord. I do think that the unbeliever is limited in his or her ability to really know what the path of wisdom is. Because you have to know his character. You have to know his ways. You have to know his will. This is all how we walk on it, is by knowing him. And so, yeah, you can pick up a proverb and you can maybe be an honest business person, because Proverbs talks about, you know, being an honest business person. But you will not fully understand how that's reflecting the character of.
Well, and I don't know if you'd agree with this or not, but it seems like so much of that is because it is a transferable wisdom, yes, father to son, mother to son, but there's a relational component in desire, right? Like if I know God, then I actually desire these things. If I desire them, I'm more likely to live them out, and wisdom being, you know, that you know, knowledge put into practice for the glory of God, if we want to call it that, or something similar.
Yeah.
I feel like the desire piece is really big in walking in wisdom.
Yeah, I think that it has a strong correlation with the trust piece, because the unbeliever is going to hit some of these wisdom sayings and not do them because they don't actually trust that they're wise, right? Walking in our own wisdom. And so whether it's the desire for it, or I would say even the thing that's further down the path, not the path of wisdom, but just the path of our own hearts, is the ability to trust that this is actually the better way. Because everybody wants wisdom. Everybody seeks wisdom, right? And so this idea of like, where do you go to get it and why do you go there, ultimately is going to be an issue of trust, because you either trust that you're smart enough, clever enough,
That's right.
List of pros and cons is strong enough that you can figure it out on your own, or your friends have enough good advice, or you trust that actually God is the one that knows what is best for me. And so Proverbs 3:5-6, you know, it was a verse that I had in my kitchen back in the day. Anyway, it's a funny story of how it got there, but this Proverbs 3:5-6 is, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your paths straight. But that first word, trust in the Lord with all your heart, and then it goes on to say, and in all your ways, I mean, that's hard. So I think the desire for has to be rooted in the fact that he is trustworthy.
Hey, Downline, this is Jamie Trussell, your podcast host. We're pausing this episode really quickly to make you aware of our 4-week core curriculum video series. This is available on our website. If you're wondering what would be something great for your small group or home group or Sunday school class, is a 4-week way to introduce a language for discipleship and some of our core discipleship lessons at Downline. This would be the way to go. I commend it to you. DownlineMinistries.com. Go to our resources page and you'll find it in the store. That's right. And which, you know, we talk a lot out here about just defining faith as a tangible expression of trust, right? That it's to walk by faith is to live in a way that shows the world I actually trust God, even if it doesn't make sense, right? Even in in our cultural paradigm, it may not make sense, but I'm going to trust that his ways are better.
Right. Well, and Isaiah, right, is like, his ways are better than your ways. They're higher than your ways. His ways are not our ways, and his thoughts are not our thoughts. But then he gives us this idea that, well, they're higher and they're better than your ways and your thoughts. But yeah, I think that's the in some ways, the kind of this top quality characteristic of a believer is that we are trusting. Like that is an indication of you've been walking with the Lord for a while, you've proved him over and over, as the hymn says, and you know he's trustworthy.
That's good. Okay. You mentioned a second ago, friends, and I think one of my favorite proverbs, I just call it the don't surround yourself with idiots proverbs.
Right. You know,
But I was curious for you. I mean, you've had to do a lot of work in here. You've written on it. You know, you were in a really good Proverbs study that came out. You're part of the contributing authors to that. In your study, I got two questions. Part one is big picture. You mentioned Lady Wisdom, Lady Folly. What are some main things they both call out for, right? Like Lady Folly says, hey, do these things. Like there's some indicative things in Folly. There's some indicative things to Wisdom. So what are some of those? And then secondly, just you personally, are there specific proverbs that you kind of hold on to that go, man, these have really helped?
Yeah. Well, I think the indicatives, the imperatives, the commands for kind of pursuing wisdom that Lady Wisdom calls out. I mean, they're action verbs. They're cry out, seek, dig, search. You're reaching for, you're striving for. I mean, it's huge participation language. It's this idea that this is not, you're not just going to sit there and this thing passively fall into your brain. I think it was R.C. Sproul that said, you know, I became a Christian immediately when God gave me a new heart and gave me faith. But he didn't immediately fill my head overnight with all the things I need to know. It's not this passive receipt of wisdom. And James is like, you know, ask and you'll receive it. And it's right. True, but I think the way we think that happens then is like, oh, it's, you know, God just drops it in my head. Right. But when we read Proverbs, it's like, no, you're working for this thing. You are searching and seeking. And I think the way that plays out in real life is that we have to search the scriptures. We have to know the scriptures. We have to have this, you know, it's what Jesus talks about in the parable of the two houses, the two men in Matthew's gospel. You know, they have to build this foundation. And that's a daily thing that you're building this knowledge base of who God is. So wisdom is not knowledge, but wisdom requires knowledge. So they're not the same thing, but that accumulation of knowledge, I think is what Solomon was talking about in Proverbs. Like you've got to search for it, seek for it.
Yes, I love that. Back home we say you can't lean on a shovel and pray for a hole.
I'm going to have to pass that one off. My husband just finished building a big fence for our horses.
Yeah, there you go.
So I'm going to have to tell him that one because wouldn't that be nice? But isn't that so true? I love that. Yeah,
it is.
Well,
it reminds me of the Dallas Willard quote. I think it was Dallas Willard where he said, grace is always opposed to earning, but never opposed to effort.
Yes.
And there's some, I think there's some anxiety there around Christians where we want to be so grace, 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 grace. We're so scared that we might think we're earning that the effort piece kind of gets lost. Even though Paul says in Titus, grace actually trains us for righteousness.
Right. Well, and Dr. Carson said, you know, he talks about it being grace-driven effort. He says, you know, we don't drift towards holiness. I would just say we don't drift towards wisdom. That is not who we are at this point in the story of redemption. We do not naturally drift passively towards wisdom. We have to work, but then his term, grace-driven effort. So even the effort that we put in is by the grace of God. The desire, back to your point, the desire that he gives is by his grace. And so even this ability to work at it, but it is work. I mean, that's all those verbs and Proverbs. And then Proverbs tells us, it's just like, get wisdom, get it, you know, like milk, you know, it's like, get wisdom. You know, so how do you get it? Well, you gotta dig for it. You gotta work for it. So anyway, I don't even know if that's answering the first part of your question, but there are a lot of action verbs. There is effort involved. There is intentionality, meaning it involves our will, our volition. Like we have to participate in this and we have to set our feet on that path. I mean, the Father is pleading with the Son to do this. So clearly there is choice in this. Clearly. And I do think that salvation can come to people and they do not pursue a life of wisdom. They do not ask God to put them in paths of righteousness, you know, lead me not into temptation, but put my feet on these paths of righteousness. And so it is a place that we work out our salvation with fear and trembling. It is the part of our walk with the Lord that involves all of who we are and including our effort. But then you said something about like verses that have really helped. I mean, I think the Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 is going to be an all-time favorite because it's so all of life, you know, trust in the Lord with all my heart and lean not on my own understanding, but in all my ways, acknowledge him. I mean, that's really hard. I lean on my own understanding a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm the queen of the pros and cons list and figuring things out on my own. You know, I'm like, I think I am way more able and clever to do these things than I am actually able to. So I think that is one that just brings me back again and again and again to who the Lord is.
Right. So you got Lady Wisdom. We're supposed to pursue it, seek it, action, intentional effort, grace-driven effort. It's almost like this is probably too reductionistic, but one we need to pursue, and yet there's this whole other one that's kind of always pursuing us, right? This lady folly, and she's in the streets. And I mean, look, there's some really, if I read it literalistically, I should say,
right?
I'm going, yes, adultery is bad, and there's a temptation, and it will destroy you. But bigger picture on that, bigger picture, foolishness in general will pursue you and destroy you. And I mean, there's all this like sensuous language, right? She's in the street and she smells good and she looks good. And you go back to her tent and then you kiss her and then her lips are dripping with poison. And then it's just kind of this whole, it's really vivid imagery Solomon uses.
Yeah. Yeah, it's terrifying, honestly. I mean, it's, you know, we read it and we think, oh, this is about, you know, marital faithfulness or sexual purity or lining your life up with the biblical sexual ethic. And it's not that. Yeah. It's just so much more than
that. It's not less than that. Yeah, it's not less.
It's not less than that. Obviously, that is foolish. Like, that is contrary to the ways of the Lord. But it's clearly so much more than that. And I think when we frame Proverbs, not only the structure like we started off with, that it really is about these women. And then we go to the end of the story and we see, oh, those women are there again. And one of them is the bride of Christ. Like Lady Wisdom is the bride of Christ. And so we are the bride of Christ. And so how are we desiring to be this lady of wisdom, to walk in his ways? But yeah, I think that the like you said, the personification of Lady Folly, man, it's just it is such a clear image of the wisdom of the world, right? It looks so good. It looks so right. And even to extend this Lady Folly into sort of all, and it's more than this, but even extending it into all of the biblical sexual ethic and the way the world just like says, calls, it looks like the world is offering wisdom, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And then it's like, oh, this all falls in these categories that these first nine chapters of Proverbs warns us so clearly. And to remember that the father is pleading with the son to not listen. And he's laying out, it's almost like Deuteronomy all over again, where God is pleading with his people on the front end. Like this is not once they're down the path. This is on the front end of there is life and death. There is blessing and cursing. Like there are these two ways, and please choose life. Like please choose the way of blessing. Please choose the way of flourishing. And it's just so kind of our Father to tell us on the front end, like we don't have to be fools. We don't have to be fools. That's we don't have to live foolish lives.
That's a good point. So how would you use this if you are discipling someone or leading someone or mentoring, pouring yourself in? Like what, how would you put Proverbs into operation in someone else's life as a kind of like a pathway of spiritual growth?
Yeah, I think it can be a hard book to do that with, but I think it's an important book to do it with. So I think that if we go back to some of the things we've already talked about, so thinking about the asking God to give you a desire for wisdom, like so the desire That's first, good. Right? Like that, you have to really start there. Like I want the Lord to orient my heart towards this path of wisdom so that I want it. I want to walk it freely. I want to walk it, like I want to him that this is the way of life. But I think we have to ask God for that. And so, and then to go back to this active pursuit, this part that we participate in. Well, if wisdom is walking in God's world, God's ways, we have to know God's ways. So mm-hmm. encouraging anybody you're discipling to actually know, like, what are the ways of the Lord? How does he, what is he doing in the world? How is his character reflected in his people and why? Like, there's this huge mission going on and, mm-hmm. and we have to know that, and we have to know what yeah. God is doing and who he is. And then we have to start talking about the character of God. Like, what are the places in Proverbs mm-hmm. that you don't trust that this is his way? That this is yeah. better, that this is the better way. And so to look at it from an issue of trust and what's going on in our hearts, like, in what am I trusting? What am I placing my trust? And so helping disciple people towards trusting the Lord. And then yeah. honestly, at the end of the day, I mean, we can go back to James, which is New Testament wisdom literature. And he's like, don't just be hearers of the word, but do what it says. Okay, just do it. Like, just walk in these things. Like, when you read a proverb and it's talking about how you use your money or how you use your words or how you use your time or how you're a friend to somebody, like, trust it and then do it. Like, actually put it into practice. Yeah. So I think it depends on who you're discipling, but I think there are some really practical ways of landing the plane in all of our lives.
No, that's really good. And look, that whole obedience piece, it's almost lost a little bit in disciple making today, at least some, in the sense of intellectualism, sure. Emotions, don't even get me started. Like, they're all, but the sheer fact that Jesus says, he who loves me will obey my commands. Not if you want me to love you, you'll obey my commands, but if you love me, you'll actually do what I say. And the Christian life, in some ways, is complex because we have competing desires and spirit, but it's not super complex as far as what Jesus has asked us to do.
I know. Right? And the things that are less clear, like, just do the things that are clear. I mean, that's that whole, like, many people are like, Lord, what is your will for my life? And I'm like, well, some of it he's already said, like, don't lie, don't steal, don't commit adultery. First Thessalonians, his will for your life is your sanctification. Like be holy, pursue righteousness. There are so many things that we want to step over and be like, oh, no, that's not what I'm asking you, Lord. I'm asking, what house should I buy? And it's like, can we not worry about that? And can we just do what I've already told you to do? And all of things, right, will be added. That's like great. All of these things are going to work out. But yeah, the just do it is not anti-biblical. That's for sure. It's what you said. It's where we place it. Do we obey because we think we are in God's love, or do we obey because we know we are deeply loved?
That's really good. Okay, I told you 30 minutes. I'm a little bit over. Final words, and then tell everybody if they want to find more of your resources and your Gospel Coalition stuff. If there's anything you want to make them aware of, I'd love for them to know how to find the good work you've done. And then any last words on Proverbs where you're like, we hadn't talked about this, but I'd love somebody to know this about the book.
Oh, I think I would say go back and read Proverbs 31 in a new light, looking at this idea that, it's not just like for women, right? This is for men too, because men are the bride of Christ. And this is the ideal bride, and looking at it through the lens of Lady Wisdom. I think Proverbs 31 has been kind of taken over by women, but it's for all of us. And so go back and read it through that lens. And then, finding me. I have a website, just my name. So that's easy. Instagram, I'm not super active, but I'm semi-active. And Gospel Coalition stuff, I would say either sign up for our women's newsletter. I can send you a link. We can put it in the show notes. And sign up for the Deep Dish podcast. That's the one that Melissa and I are doing together, where we're trying to talk about a lot of issues of just wisdom issues. Like, what does the gospel have to do with this particular real life topic, with how we live the moments of our days? So,
yes. And I'll echo that too. That's such a good, fun, y'all take things seriously, but don't take yourselves too seriously, which is, I think, a really good mix of things. So I would recommend that podcast as well. And hey, as one native Southerner to a transplant, welcome to the South. Now, Texas is not the South, no matter what they think. But I grew up in Alabama, so I'd love to.
Yeah, Texas is not the South.
Texas is its own thing.
Texas is its own continent. I mean, it's not even its own country. It's like
and they're proud of it.
Yes, I know. I know. Yeah. Some of it's justified, but maybe not all of it. That's sorry, right. Texans.
All right. Hey, hopefully we'll do it again. Thanks a lot, Courtney.
Thanks, Jamie.
We thank you for listening to this episode of the Downline Podcast. Please subscribe, give us 5 stars, help us to get this content out to as many people as possible as we continue to partner with men and women in the Great Commission as we seek to make disciples as a lifestyle for a lifetime.